Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel. Each week they unleash their raw, stripped down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Well, let's roll. Let's do that, okay? Let's do that. Hi, everyone. Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with another episode of The Suspendables. You say the or the, Russ?
The Suspendables.
The Suspendables. We've been doing each and every week for a long time now. And let me get this out of the way, Russ, because I will forget if I don't do it. And I haven't done it in a long time. It's shout outs. Okay. Because you're like me, Russ. Remember, you go, you'll tell a guy, yeah, I listen to your show. It's like, okay, I'll give you a shout out. So Five Hole Fantasy. He's got a podcast, Rusty. So we're doing the you plug me and I'll plug you. Okay. You know the way that goes. And it's called, speaking of that, it's called Five Hole Fantasy Hockey, hosted by Mike.
Oh my God.
By Mike Rogerson, Rogerson, TJ Branson, Zach Vogel, I guess. They talk about fantasy hockey, hockey pools, and betting. And they have a couple of pops while they do it.
That plug sounds like your days at Barry T's.
It does. Yeah. You plug me, I'll plug you. It's at the Mike Rogerson on Twitter. It's FHF Hockey on Twitter. Anyways, hello to those guys. And we've got a couple of the young guys who work for Fit for Less. And they are Tyler and Randy. I was in there the other day, and they recognized the show, Rusty.
Nice.
There we go. Nice. We got them out of the way.
I got a couple.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, you got a couple. Go ahead.
So you remember Greg Stark from Dauphin, Manitoba? He's a longtime listener. He's a good buddy. He just sent a text, and he and Brian Gilroy, they love the show. So shout out to those two boys.
Are any of these shoutouts, Russ, people can get money out of, or are we just doing shoutouts?
Starkey's got a lot of dough.
Okay, Stark, step up, would you? a couple weeks ago, I went to White Court. You were supposed to go, Russ, but you couldn't do it. I went to White Court. White Court is this unique little town in Alberta, just outside Edmonton, a couple hours outside Edmonton, northwest, I guess, of Edmonton. And they do nothing but a bunch of charity work. I've been here since 85, and every year it's like, oh yeah, White Court. What are they doing this time? Yeah, they're raising dough for a bunch of stuff. And they had another one called Hockey Heroes, the Hockey Heroes game with some alumni guys. And I got asked to go up and MC it. And I did, and had a million laughs. And so they play a game. They get the NHL alumni guys to play a game against, you know, guys who pay, and they raise a bunch of dough. And they did. We raised a bunch of money. I think for the Boys and Girls Club. And White Court. And one of the guys on the panel, as we say, Theo was there. Of course, we talked to him last week, Theo Fleury. There was Ethan Morrow was there, who's just he's a really weird guy, man. Ethan is.
No way.
I like this guy. One, you know, and I did the hot stove. Okay. So it's kind of like, and I'm going, okay, give me a story, you know, and the guests we're going to bring on, right? He's like, no problem. Give me the mic. I got tons of story. Tim Hunter was there. And Steve McIntyre, I guess. Steve McIntyre was there, the biggest man I've ever seen. And so I go to Ethan, give us a story, you know, and you know, our guest gave us a little story, and then someone else. And then he grabs the mic and goes, yeah, I really don't have any stories. He's like, I'm thinking, Jim, I'm going back over the years. And then he's pausing and go, no, yeah, nothing happened on that year. Yeah. He goes, I'm sorry. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. It's an MC's nightmare. But the guy who did have some stories, man. And he's a guy who you meet once and you feel like he's your longtime friend. Absolutely great guy. Two-time Stanley Cup champ. The rivalry days, man, with Calgary and Edmonton. He was there. Jamie McCowan joins us. Jamie?
Good
Schooner. How are you, my friend?
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, you know, Russ and I met a few times in the corner, and I'm not sure we're longtime friends.
Yeah.
Fuck. I came out with a few welts on my arms and legs.
Oh, accidentally.
Yeah. Oops, sorry, Russ. Whack. Oops, sorry.
Going back to Ethan Morrow.
Yeah.
About 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago, I think it was in Slave Lake. I was up there doing an event, and there was like 5 or 6 alumni from the Flames, and then, you know, I think it was like 7 alumni from the Oilers, and you had, a lot of guys. It worked out really well. But anyways, I'm on the stage, and I'm right in between Ethan Morrow and George Laroque.
Oh boy!
Right. So between the two of them, there's 285, 290 each.
Yeah.
And immediately I get the vibe that maybe they don't like each other that much.
Oh.
And I was like. And I was kind of like, oh, geez. And then Theron Fleury's a little bit further over. And I'm going, Theo, you know, fight breaks out. Like, who do you got? And he's like, are you kidding me? I got nobody. I'm running. Like, yeah. So as they're talking back and forth, I slowly started to move my seat back about, as finally, I was like a foot back behind him in case punches started to come. And I'm going like, I don't care if this is hockey related or not. I'm not getting between these two guys because they're both big men.
Yeah.
But I think whatever was wrong, I think that's water under the bridge now. But
Laroque, punched me when we were doing Battle of the Blades in Toronto he thought it was funny. I walked by him and he just gave me like what he considered a love slap. Fuck, it hurt for 2 days.
Was that George?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a big laugh.
Oh, like he's just he's laughing and just gave me one of these little jabs in the shoulder. Oh my god!
Yeah,
yeah.
I can't imagine getting hit by that guy when he's pissed off.
Well, you know what? McIntyre was one of those guys where when I heard he was going up there, I'm going like, who is this guy? Right? You know, it goes to show you get out of the league for, well, I guess almost 20 years now or whatever it's been, and you go like, when did he play? So you have to find out all the stats on these guys.
Used to be polite.
Yeah. And they go like, 6'5"? Okay. Yeah, but then you see, like, typically the guy who says he's 6'5", he's not. By the time we get up there, he'll be the blimpy old bugger, right?
Yeah.
No, like, Mac is still, he's like a tank. And luckily, he's not the fastest tank, but he's a big man. And that kind of showed you, there was about a 10-year period there where every team kind of got rid of their middleweight sort of thing, and this just brought in like one or maybe two super heavyweights to fight, and then like there was no real fighting other than those guys fighting.
Yeah.
And you know, like we had Brian McGrattan's a good example they had here in Calgary there for a few years, and they are just huge men, like just huge, like like
football huge.
I felt like I was you, Russ. I was so small compared to those guys.
You know, now you know what it felt like to be me.
Yeah. When I read that too about him, as I was perusing, you know, bios, and I saw that the same thing, you know, Steve McIntyre 6'5", and I'm the same, Jamie. Right? I've got a buddy who will bet you any amount of money you want. He'll ask you, you know, Billy Comrie. Okay, he's hilarious, and he'll say, "How tall are you?" Right. And the guy will say, I'm 6'1", right? And he'll go, "I'll bet you $1,000 you're not." Right. And they laugh and they go, "Come on." You're right. And they, whatever. Right. And he says, "You're not 6'1". I'm telling you right now. And they get kind of pissed. Right. They're like, "How the fuck do you know how tall I am?" He's going, "I know that you're not 6'1". And almost, he will almost always lay on there as well, going, "I'll tell you what, not only are you not 6'1", okay, but you're not over 6'1".
Wow.
Okay. You're under 6'1", I guarantee you. And every time, okay, the shoes come off. And go, okay, take the socks off, get the measuring tape. Everyone lies about how tall they are, right? They always add a quarter inch or half inch.
Everybody rounds up.
Right. Except when I read Steve McIntyre at 6'5", I walked in the room. I didn't know who he was. And, you know, you're milling around. Rusty, it's like cocktail hour. The thing was over. And it might even been you, Jamie. You were talking to him, and I went, "Okay, there's Jamie McCown. I know him. We've hooked up before. I've at some events." And I turned to the guy beside me, going, "Okay, who the fuck is that guy?" Okay, he lied about his height because he's about 6'7". Okay, he's, I don't know, he's got to be 280. You know, it's
well, he had the big boots on too. And I'm going, like, just rubbing salt in the wound. Yeah. You're already taller than anybody in the room. And then you put on 3-inch heels like a chick.
Yeah. Like a chick. yeah. Fucking hands on him were just, like I said, bananas for fingers, you know.
He had big hands.
Well, what a gentle guy. You know, he was, I was talking to him after, you know, and I said, great job in the, you know, Russ, you got six guys up there. And as Jamie says, you know, six is a little tough, right?
Because
someone's going to get left out. And
especially
if
Marty McSorley's one of the six.
Marty. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Five guys can have an hour nap.
Yeah. Well, this is the case. You got Theo up there, right? It's the same deal, right? You got to make sure you get to the other guys first, right? Because if you get to Theo, but he was so, you know, he said, I couldn't believe who I was on stage with. I talked to him after, right? He goes, I was nervous and, you know, and all this stuff. Super humble guy, farmer, you know, he's back working on a farm. But anyway, that was a great night, Jamie. And some hilarious stuff that happened. And we want to get to your career, by the way. Congrats. The two Stanleys, right? Calgary in 89 and Detroit. What year in Detroit?
98
in Detroit. What happened to Detroit, Jamie? Why is Detroit not doing anything anymore, by the way?
Well, you know what? I mean, they were stacked for a while there. And obviously, when Russ and I retired, they had to change all the rules.
Sure. Right? Yes. So, yeah.
But obviously, the salary cap and that sort of thing, that's made a huge difference. And, you know, one of the worst teams in the league, you know, within a year or two could be one of the best teams in the league just simply because they could pick up so many players, right?
Right.
It didn't used to be that way. I mean, look at LA back in the 70s and 80s. They had some good talent, but they just couldn't put a team together. And maybe the fact of the matter is most Canadians didn't want to go there because they didn't think it was good hockey. We were so brainwashed back then. Mm-hmm. You know, it goes to show you, if they had already allowed all the salaries to be acknowledged in the paper back before, Russ and I started to play, we would have made a heck of a lot more money, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the money really didn't go up until the salaries were all released. And then Eric Lindros, you know, came into the league and suddenly he was making 3.3 and Gretzky was making a million or some crazy number.
Right, right.
And within 2 weeks, you know, Gretzky's making more, Lemieux's making more, Messier's making more, and it just dragged everybody up. But, It's just one of those crazy things where, you know, changes. And like I said, I was afraid to get traded. You know, no one wanted to get traded. They almost shamed you. And I'm going all the way back to the Allen Eagleson times where, you know, if you got traded, like you know, your family's going to be disappointed. Like, how terrible a person really are you, sort of thing. So consequently, you stayed in Calgary. I didn't want to get traded from Calgary. And I gave them what I now realize, or what I realized very quickly, was just a ridiculous offer. Like, I will give you, and this number might sound stupid now, but it was like $1 million spread over 3 years. And it was Canadian money because I was still working in Canada.
Right.
And I said, I'll be happy if I can just get like whatever that works out to, $333,000 a year, right?
Yeah.
Which is more than I was making at the time. And then I get traded to Toronto. And, you know, they give me a 5-year deal for American money and it's like 4 times more money.
The trainer in Toronto was making more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was unbelievable.
So you gave that offer to Calgary or they gave that to you?
I gave that to them. Oh. And everybody did. Like Doug Risebrough, you know, and you know what? He's a nice enough guy and he's funny. If you had him on here, he can tell stories.
Right.
He's one of those guys, you like him. But he was so out of his league when he became the general manager. He just, for whatever reason, he hadn't got caught on quite yet. And years later, when he worked with Sather and that sort of thing, he obviously got better. But, you know, give a good example, Doug Gilmour. Doug Gilmour is looking for a new contract. At the same time, I'm looking for a new contract. And he goes to arbitration. The arbitration gentleman goes, we will give you $1.4 million. And which was huge money.
Sure.
And Doug Risebrough comes back and says, you know what? The arbitrator has spoken. I'll give you $1.5 million for over 2 years. And Doug's going like, I'll take it. So $1.5 million first year, $1.5 million the second year. No. $1.5 million spread over 2 years. Doug Gilmour's going like, so you're going to give me $100,000 for my second year? And I'm making, that's he was almost spiteful. And I think what had happened there, a good general manager doesn't worry about the money. Like, it's like, hey, the fact that, you know, maybe the general manager was making $300,000 at the year at the time or whatever he was making, but the fact that he's negotiating a deal for way more money than he's making, that's a moot point. Like, if Doug Gilmore was worth 1.5 according to, or 1.4 according to the then he's definitely worth 1.4, you know. And but he couldn't get it through his head, and he did the same thing with me. He just kept coming up with excuses why he shouldn't pay me. And, you know, the rest is history. I go to Toronto, have some good years there in Toronto. When I say that, the team was good. So, you know how that is. All the ships rise with the same water, right?
Yeah,
and Doug Moore became a superstar, and Wendell Clark was great. And then they brought in Matt Sundin, who to this day I think is maybe one of the most underrated players ever. Like, for a lot of years there in Toronto, there wasn't much. You know, he had Ty Domi as his sidekick. Like, who else is out there?
Yeah.
But underrated. And, yeah. But I got traded to, I'd separated my shoulder, and I get traded to Detroit. And the day before, I'm sitting up in the boxes, and they didn't have very many boxes there. And I can't remember his name, Smith, the same Smith that was a GM in Winnipeg for a while, the Russian expert, and the Smith that was in Ranger.
Neil Smith.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it was, yeah. Anyways, he was the expert in Russian studies, I think is what his title was. Anyways, he finally comes up, and he's actually co-general manager with Ken Dryden. And he comes in, I hadn't seen the guy for 4 months, and he comes up, and everybody's kind of looking at me going like, what's he doing here? And I go, what are you doing here? Oh, I just came up to see you. And I try not to swear too much, but I gave him so many F-bombs, like, get the hell out of here before I kick you right in the ass and blah, blah, blah. You know, this is the general manager. GM. I would never do that to anyone else. But I knew he was only there for one reason. He was trying to figure out if he could trade me. And I said, no, I can't play for like at least another week, but I will be able to play. So if you're thinking about trading me, go ahead. Like, whatever. We would never trade you, Jamie. You are the heart and soul of this team. We would never trade you. F-ing next day, I'm traded.
They can lie, right? They can lie. They're good liars.
Oh, yeah. It was excellent. So,
you know, I didn't realize Neil Smith, he was in Toronto.
Yeah. Well, I got the right Smith, I'm sure.
Oh, Neil Smith was the GM in New York, because he traded for me. He won the cup in New York with.
Let's just hang on. We'll get our producer here to look it up.
Ken Dryden and.
Are we talking Mike Smith, maybe?
Was it Mike Smith? Ken Dryden and him were the GM at the same time. You see, I hated him so much, he's gone completely out of my mind, right? It's like, and the funny thing is, he came to a training camp that we had in Waterloo. And, you know, we had Kitchener-Waterloo area, and we had the doors were locked and everything because, you know, everything's going on. And one of the security guards comes and says, hey, there's some guy here. He says he's the general manager. He wants in. And the security guard comes to me because he recognizes me. And I go, has he got like muscled hair and he's got his ties like down? And the guy goes, yeah. He goes, this guy's a stalker. Don't let him in. And so for the next like 6 hours, he's sitting outside the dressing room or the outside the arena. And doesn't get in until everything's done. The guys start walking out, and he's going, no one would let me in. Like,
that's
the
guy. So, that's hilarious.
Awesome.
Anyway, Steve, did you get the right guy? Or?
Yeah, it is Mike Smith. He's the associate Leafs GM.
Mike Smith.
Yeah. He and Ken Dryden. And there's another Ken Dryden. Not another story. Ken Dryden, like, obviously one of the best goalies ever on that team. It's tough to play on a team like that when you're getting 12 shots a game sometimes.
Right.
But he came to me one time at the same spot. I think I got Smith locked outside, and then Ken Dryden comes up to me just as I'm going on. And he goes, Jamie, come over here. I'm going like, sure. And the coach is waving me. I'm going like, hey, like, this guy outranks you, like, whatever. And so he goes, what do we need with this team? And I said, what do you mean? Like, if we had to trade for a player, what do we need? And I said, well, you know, not to brag, but, you know, you got Bob Rouse and Dave Elliott, myself, you know, defense is okay. We lose one guy, we're not going to be too bad. I said, you've got some great forwards now. You got two or three really good lines. We lose one of those guys for a bit. But I said, we only have one goalie. You know, Felix Potvin, if you're going to trade for somebody, we need a good backup goalie. And then he goes, you're wrong. right? Oh, okay. And so I'm wrong. And yep. Then he spends 30 minutes telling me how you plow a field. And it's like, so you're out there. You've got your overalls on. You've got your boots on. And I'm saying, you know, I got my equipment on because I'm supposed to be practicing. I'll get to that. Anyways, and he says, you got to keep your head down. Always keep your head down because when you're going along, you might hit a rock, right? And so you got to have your head down. I go, okay, I'll keep my head down. I got it. And he goes, but you got to keep your head up. I'm going like, oh, I got to keep my head down, but I got to keep my head up. He goes, why do I have to have my head up now? He goes, you got to watch where you're going. And this literally goes on for 30 minutes. God. And finally, the coach starts tapping on the window with his stick. I'm like, can I have my player back? And I go, oh, thank you, Mr.
Yeah, this guy's a senator.
But he has no clue because it's like if you're on a super good team, things aren't the same as when you're on an average team or a below average team. Like he played 8 years. That's all he played. On the Montreal Canadiens, and when they were at their best.
Yeah.
Right. So then he tells you how the real world works.
That's funny.
Try playing on Hartford. You know, play on Hartford for a year or two, and when you're losing 11-0.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah. Every third day.
Tell me how it works. Yeah, so, yeah. Anyways, that's my GM stories. That's the only one I'll say. And all the other GMs are good. Kenny Holland was good to me. Cliff Fletcher was good to me. And you know, I was fortunate that I had some good people.
Yeah. Cool. Cool. Yeah. When you're bringing up all those stories about salaries, right. We even went to Larry Robinson was one of our guests. Great guy. He's a guy much like you, you know, super nice, friendly. And when he came on talking about salaries, I don't know what he made, but it was some like astronomically low number in 1972, yeah. You know, like, I don't know.
It was like 11.5 or something. It was something low. He had to work that summer.
Yeah, he paved highways. Okay, for the province of Quebec in the summer. Though, if you go a little further back, some of those events I've been to, I remember there's a guy who owns a bar in Halliburton. He played for the Leafs, Walt McKechnie. It's called McKech's, and we were doing an event in PEI for Danny Murphy. Great. Philanthropist down there, really benevolent guy, just gives his money away all day. And if you get a guy like that, okay, Pete Mahovlich was like that too. He was in a foursome of mine one time, and you talk about the NHL, okay, they immediately go to, you know what, the NHL's fucked, okay? We didn't make half the money we should have done. All of them, right, are going, I just saw Connor McDavid sign for 13 mil, and I made 28,000 a year. You know, they are bitter, bitter, bitter guys, man. And they're not alone, right? So they're not so fun. If you do with some of those events, okay.
Yeah.
I want guys who played like after 1985 or something like that.
Well, you know, Dennis Hall, like he's one of those guys who he's a farmer. He's got that mentality. Making money in hockey was a bonus, I think. But yeah, there are some guys out there that are a little sour. And I remember the first year, because I was thinking like, I'm not lasting in this league because, you know, the injuries and fights and stuff like that. We had a guy named, I think his name was Jimmy Jackson, played for Calgary, and he was on a three-way contract. and I didn't know what that meant. I go like, is this a sex talk? What's going on here? And he was making 60,000 Canadian to play in Canada. And then he was the I and the American League were backwards at that time. The International League was considered higher ranked. And he made 35 in that, and he made 25 in the American League. So in the same year, he had been on three different teams, all within the Calgary Flames organization. And I'm going like, how do you even survive? Like, where do you live? Like, what do you do? Yeah. And right away I was going like, I got to make sure that I start saving my pennies, right? Because I could be in the eye pretty quick. Yeah, right.
Or buy that guy lunch or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah,
Jeff, my brother Jeff signed a big, big deal. His last deal was St. Louis, and he got 3 years, $3.5 million a year. And we had a fishing derby. And the Queen Charlotte's raised money for Canuck Place in Vancouver. And we had ran it every year and Jeff had signed. So we'd still planned to have it. So this was our final year. We were having this derby and Brett and Bobby Hall came.
Oh, uh-oh.
Bobby's already had a bottle of wine. It's like, right, 9 a.m., 9:30 in the morning.
Red wine.
Yeah, red wine. He's already had the bottle of red. Jeff walks into the lodge where we're hosting the fishing derby, and Bobby Hall yells out, "You signed for $3.5 million. you're not worth that. And Jeff just looks at him. He goes, yep. And they got to pay me another 3.5 next year too.
It's amazing how many, well, I mean, hockey, I'd like to think that there's been more good people playing hockey than in the other sports. And oftentimes reporters tell you that, you know, of the interviewing the basketball players, interviewing the baseball players, football, the hockey players were always the easiest to deal with, because they either came from small town Canada or small town United States somewhere, and typically we're pretty good. But I can tell you, Bobby, I've been with him a few times when he's had the red wine going.
Sure, and, sure.
Man, he is not very happy sometimes. No.
And how about bitter. How about Jamie when you get the first shot of his tongue? When he gets hammered, he loves sticking his tongue out, Rusty, and the first time I saw it was in Phoenix, Russ, when you and I were way back at the fantasy camp, and he'll be talking to, you know, the wait staff or whoever it is. And I'm going, all right, he's got that growly voice. All right. And then he goes, bah. And this freaking thing is the size of a Frisbee, man. It just comes flying out.
It's huge.
You know, what's kind of cool. You talk about those teams, Toronto, Detroit, for example, and other teams around the league. I'm always amazed. The Oilers and the Calgary rivalries, of course, we'll talk about it for sure, because we want to hear from a player's perspective. We know it from the fans how much we loved it. But I think you head up the alumni in Calgary, if I'm not mistaken. Are you the president of the alumni there?
Yeah, it's a great non-paying job.
Yeah.
And the huge Oilers, alumni, by the way.
That's my point. You know, you never, for some reason, and I want to ask you why, Jamie, you know, the LA Kings alumni, not very strong. Detroit, I don't know. Eddie Mio, I know, is involved in it. I hear from Eddie every once in a while. Some of these other teams, you know, Florida and these other guys, Washington. You never, you know, I hear some of those alumni associations, and I forget who it was. And the retired player was telling me, yeah, it's good. We got 28 guys, you know, in our alumni now. We got 17 guys, you know, they show up for every game. And what does Calgary have? 100 Oilers? I don't know. Oilers have 100 or something like that. Like,
the Oilers. Well, you know what? No disrespect, because the different guys run things differently. When I came on board as the president, I immediately said, listen, you come to one game, you're getting $500 worth of tickets, right? Just a pair of tickets where we're at. You get a free meal, blah, blah, blah. I said, so do you want to be part of the alumni? You got to pay $100, right? Well, you'd be surprised how many people said, I'm not paying $100. I said, well, you're never getting a ticket.
Oh, come on.
And then it changed. And so we have kind of a lucky situation where there's been a lot of guys that didn't play for the Flames, but were NHL veterans. Like, I think of a guy like Lindsey Carson, right? Played a lot of years in Philadelphia and what have you. And he settled there. And, you know, Morris Lukowicz, you know, he settled there, and other guys like that. And we just said, you know what? We're more than happy to have these guys be part of our alumni. You know, they can show up at events, they can have signed autographs, they can do whatever. So right now, I think this year we have like 95 guys that have signed, or excuse me, paid their $100.
Yeah.
And some of the guys don't even live in town. They, here's your $100. And what we do is, we're very fortunate. We've had some great ownership groups in the past. And I think that's really the difference between Edmonton and Calgary, not the players necessarily. It's just the fact that the players that did play in those different spots, you are really, when I say appreciated, like, obviously, you know, Pocklington appreciated Gretzky and Messier and the guys that were scoring the goals.
That's it. Yeah.
But, like, I can tell you from a personal standpoint, I was invited, you know, 20 times to one of the owner's houses, like, not just me, but like, hey, I'm going to have some people over, and I go over to Doc Seaman's place, and then, or Harley Hotchkiss's place, or something along those lines. And you're telling people that's like, yeah, we went over there, and Harley Hotchkiss's wife made all the dinner and cooked all the pies and the cakes and stuff. And it's like in many places, you wouldn't get that, not unless you're the superstar. Mm-hmm. Right.
Nice.
And so consequently, when I say the average guy, the Jamie McCowan, the Colin Patterson, the Harry Bears and Dana Murs, and, you know, those sorts of guys, they all settled in Calgary because we were treated so well. And, yeah, they only won one cup there. It would have been nice if they could have won a couple more. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is, you know, they feel good in the city. And I think that's the issue in Edmonton. a lot of your superstars never ever wanted to settle in Edmonton. Right. And you know, maybe justifiably, if you could go to New York and make $6 million a year to do something, well, it's probably better than being in Edmonton and not making a bunch of money. But at the same time, you know, if you were to go back to those winning teams, who settled there?
Yeah, Kevin Lowe's the only guy I can think of. Yeah.
Dave Hunter.
Yeah, Hunts is there, yeah. Samek stayed.
And he was like a third or fourth liner.
Yeah.
And Dr. Randy Gregg.
Yep.
Right? And I'm thinking, like, right now, if I had to, off the top of my head, I couldn't pick anybody else. And so that's kind of the difference. And so when you don't have, you know, like we have Lanny McDonald, who every, you know, he's Lanny. We used to joke all the time, like, Lanny McDonald, and then here come the rest of the Calgary Flames. Right? Lanny. And So a quick Lanny story. Lanny was always late. And myself, Jim Poplinski, Steve Conroyd, Lanny, and Paul Reinhart used to drive together to the airport. And as you know, playing in Vancouver, there's a lot of plane trips if you're in the Western League. And so Lanny would all like, oh, Lanny, we got to leave by 7 o'clock. Like 7 o'clock, you got to be over at Steve, because most of us live in the same area. He'd always be 15, 20 minutes late. So we'd get Lanny and we'd be like speeding and getting up there. And then we'd cut up into the wrong line and stuff. And then we'd roll down the window. I'm rolling it down like this.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
And,
yeah.
And then we'd stick Lanny's head out, literally stick it out and say, Lanny, ask if we can get in there. Like, cut in. And then he'd stick his head in. The mustache is blowing. And everybody go, oh, Lanny, come on in. Come on in, Lanny. Who else was there? Who cares? Yeah. It's just Lanny.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
put him on the hood.
Yeah, but Lanny, you know, he was one of those guys. He was doing stuff with the Special Olympians back before it was something that you did. And he did all kinds of stuff like that. So we had like 7 or 8 guys all of a sudden on Calgary that were like 24 years of age and under. And then we had like Mike Eaves came in a little bit later. But we had like 2 guys that were old. And they were both married, good family people. And I think we learned from them as well. And it was like, you know, I really like the West. I really like the humidity and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And so without carving anybody, that's the biggest difference between the alumni in Edmonton and Calgary. We have like 100+ people that are willing to be part of it. In Edmonton, you've got maybe 25 guys or 30 guys, but most of them are not like 10, 15 year guys in the league. Most of them, you know, you've got Brownies up there, right? And you know, he had a pretty good career, mm-hmm. and there's a few other guys, but most of the guys, you know, are like McIntyre, you know, hey, I played, you know, 90 games with Edmonton, or I played whatever. So nothing against them because they do a good job, but it makes it tougher to put on events when it's like, hey, I can only find 4 guys.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right. Gretz is the obvious, right? Who didn't settle there. Grant Fear's not there. Glennie Anderson's not there. Mark Messier's not there. Paul Coffey is not there. Yari Curry's not there. You're right. I never, you know, anyway, credit to you guys, you know, because like I say, I've been at tons of events and it's always been that sort of 30, 40 number, you know, of our alumni. And yet you guys, so good on you. Let's talk about the rivalry. Or no, first, you know what I want you to do? You know what story I want you to tell?
Oh God.
Cause I had to sit down when you told it. Anyone who knows, Glenn Anderson personally, as I do, because I was here in Edmonton all those years. And, you know, there were always sort of tons of rumors about Glenn, you know, what sort of guy he was and strange. And he really is, you know, the only way I can explain Glenn is we used to hang out at this bar called the Sidetrack, and I was there all the time. And Andy didn't mind getting out, you know, even when he wasn't supposed to, you know, he'd sneak out, you know, nights before games with Kirk.
I find that hard to believe an NHL player would go out and have a beer
before the game. And I'd see him one night, right? Rusty and Jamie, he'd go like this, Jimmy, he was like the first hugger I ever met. You know, he's like, Jimmy, you know, give me the, sit down, let's have a fucking beer. Rah, rah, rah. And then it'd be a runaway. I'd run into him a week later. Okay. Same bar. And I'd go up to him, you know, sort of tap him on the shoulder, go, hey, Andy, you know, I'd have my arms out and he'd be like, what? Right? And you're waiting for a punchline, right? You're waiting for something. And he'd go snarl at you and go, fuck off. Right? And he'd walk away. It's like, anyway, that's what he was like. I mean, and he showed up when they won the Stanley Cup, Kevin had a house with an indoor pool and it was a rip. And, you know, it was like 3 weeks, man. You've been around the Stanley Cup, Russ. You've won a couple, Jamie. And Glennie knocked on the door. So it was a big pool party with a full on Russ, like a 22 foot surfboard. Like, I don't know where he found this thing, you know, threw it in the pool. He was just a cool guy though. Great, great guy. But you told a hilarious story about you and Glenn Anderson, must've been in Toronto, that you were rooming together.
Well, yeah. Okay. The story is this, that like Glenn and Grant Fuhr had been traded in there previous to me. And when Doug Gilmore and I got traded, I came in a day after simply because Doug was like, he just wanted to get out of there. So he took like a 9 o'clock flight out. And I took the next day because I had some stuff I had to get organized at house. And, but they knew that in theory, I hated Glenn Anderson because he was an Oiler. And he used to get that stick flying and stuff. And I'd be doing the cross-checking and stuff. So, Mike Murphy and Mike Kitchen were the two assistant coaches at the time. And Tom Watt was the head coach. And they said, what we need to do to really bring this group together, because Rick Natras came on the trade and Rick Walmsley came on the trade as well, is that we need to make sure the Oilers and the Flames get along, right? You know,
yeah.
On their infinite wisdom, we the very next trip is to Chicago. And we're staying at the Drake Hotel, which Russ, you don't.
Mm-hmm. And, I am. Yeah.
On the second floor, where they used to put all the hockey teams. And for those people that don't understand, hockey players were notoriously cheap, right? But and so they would figure out ways to get free TV, right? Like, you know, the new movie would be coming on. I don't know how they did it, but they'd be talking to people at a university. If you stick a pin in here and something else there, you can get a free, you know,
free TV movies.
Yeah. And so consequently, the owners of like the Drake and some of the other hotels, the Marriott in by the airport in LA, they just never bothered to change it back because every single time they had somebody to come in. Anyways, we're on the second floor. And so I'm new to it. I know a couple of the guys there and that's it. And so everybody gets thrown their keys and here's the keys. And everybody's going to take the elevators up to the second floor. But I haven't been told who I'm with. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking around. And I'm going like, oh, there's Bob Rouse, defenseman. That's probably who I'm with, right? And oh, no, that's not my room. And I go past them. And this goes on and on. Finally, I'm looking down the hall. There's only one guy left. And it's Glenn Anderson. I go, are you kidding me? It's like, I hate this guy. It's like, anyways, I'm looking at it and I go, all right, well, be a bigger man, right? Sort of thing. And sure enough, we're in the same spot. Anyways, he opens it, goes in, and just starts screaming. Like, it's like, hey, hey. It's like, we're, and then I look, kind of look in, and there's four poster beds in there. And there's like chaps on the walls and stuff. Like, and it's like, they call it the cowboy up room. And I'm going like,
what
the hell? It's like, so I'm just about to step in. I go, no. If I ever step into this room with Glenn, with the chaps on the wall, I'll never be able to live it down. So I say, Glenn, not an effing chance that I'm ever going to sleep in this room with you. And I let the door shut. I go back downstairs and I throw my key down and say, my room is unacceptable. And they go, oh, okay, here's another room, Mr. McCown, sort of thing. And so I have my own room for the night. And the next day, the two assistant coaches keep staring at me going like, why is he not saying something? Like, why is he not flipped out yet? Finally, they say, hey, so how was, how was Glennie? And I go, what do you mean? Like, I know what they know.
Yeah, right.
But now I'm working them. They're going like, what? And finally, I tell them, listen, I had my own single. And they're looking at me, how the hell did you have a single? And they call the guy over that's doing all the stuff. Anyway, so I finally pull him aside and told him the story. And they kind of said the same thing with you. Like, Glenn's just out there sometimes. We don't know what's going on with him. We just figured we had to get you two guys together. And I said, no. But now that we're on the subject, I'm never going to room with him.
One of the best ever roommate stories is Rusty, your brother, Jeff, Berezan. I mean, it's
our Bergevin.
Or Bergevin, right? That
they're in Detroit. And Holly is injured, and so is McInnes. So Jeff ends up rooming with Bergevin. So they, typical Jamie, how we always went out night before a game on the road for dinner and then go back to the hotel, order dessert, watch ESPN or TSN, whatever's on. So they phone down and they order dessert and they're sitting, they're in bed in their boxers or whatever. And the door knocks and Bergie goes, get it. Jeff goes, fuck you. I'm the veteran. I played more games than you. You get it. He goes, fuck you. I was in the league before you. They start arguing. The guy knocks again. Jeff jumps up, gets it. And the guy's wheeling in the cart. They turn around. Bergie has made one bed and he's hiding under the covers in the other. And said to the guy, to Jeff, get that guy out of here and get back to bed. In this feminine voice.
Get that ice cream or something, and, didn't he say?
And then he's Jeff's pulling on the covers. And Bergie's like, don't leave me alone till he leaves. Like, and the guy's like, sir, I don't care what's going on here. Just sign the bill. Yeah. Let me be on my way. And then as the guy's leaving, Bergie yells out, put the red dress back on. So the next day, Jeff walks in the lobby and every employee is staring at him.
Oh, my God. Strong.
Oh, my God. As you know, Jamie, I mean, you played so long that we just had so much fun on the road. That one little story, Jimmy, he's talking about how the TVs, somebody did something. It was the college guys or the new junior guys. It was the young guys on the team had figured out how to put something in the back of the TV into the box and we would get free movies. And I would never forget, as you're telling the story, I'm playing with Dallas. We go into the Drake in Chicago and I can hear somebody going, oh, there must've been a team in here before us. I'm getting movies.
I'll tell you, Kevin Stevens, man. God bless Kevin, man. I love that guy. And they were on the road, and this was right when Pamela Anderson and Tommy Lee had this pornographic homemade video of them on a boat, right? And they turned it into a movie, Russ, right? They and those were back in the days when you would get into your room and you could flip on free previews, you know? Including porn, right? You could get these free previews.
Oh, I never would have done that.
No one would have done that. Kevin Stevens, okay, goes down to the front desk, okay, and there's a girl there behind the desk, and he leans in, kind of looking to both sides, and whispers to her, says, listen, I wonder if you could do me a favor. Could you change that free preview from 2.5 minutes to just over 4 minutes? That would be just fantastic.
You need a little more time.
True story. That's a true story. And Kevin wouldn't mind us telling that story. You got to have a few, Jamie, a few more roommate stories or road trips or.
Going back to the, there's something you don't want to say. I remember the one time Mike Bullard, you remember Mike Bullard?
Right? Oh, yeah.
He was a hell of a talent.
Yeah.
And anyways.
Ottawa guy, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. His favorite trick was, like, if you go, like, especially when hockey teams were going down to LA, what usually happened is there'd be like a Thursday game or maybe even a Wednesday game. And then Thursday, Friday would be off and then you'd play on Saturday. So the key always was you win that first game that the team would give you like the one day off and guys would be, you know, burning themselves on the beach and stuff. But what they'd also do with the free TVs and stuff, guys would have all their doors, you know, opened up, you know, have a bag in front of them. So you can walk up and down the hallway and guys were playing cards here or playing cards there, doing something. And Mike Bullard's favorite trick, and I don't know how he could do it, but he would sneak into each other, like he could sneak into three rooms at the same time and have a number two.
Okay? Oh, no.
And he would leave it in there.
Oh.
No toilet paper, anything. He would just pull his pants off. He never wore underwear anyways. And he'd slip into another room and drop another deposit. Oh. And then, you know, you'd be playing cards and then somebody would say, hey, can I use the can? Yeah, sure. It's right over there. And then it'd be like, there's a big turn in here. And we'd all go the same time. Bullard. And then you'd go bug him and he'd say something. Oh, I might want to. What are you talking about? You got a head like a wood duck anyways. It's like, and we're going like, what does that even mean? Like, what is that? Did you or didn't you? And of course it was him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the true story is he gets traded to Calgary. He asked me where he should buy. And I said, I just bought a house and built a house in an area called Oak Mount Estates, which compared to what you see in LA is not estates. It's just a regular house. And so I said, there's like five other lots. It's a brand new area. So build a house here if you're building a house, and guaranteed you'll get your money out of it. He buys the lot right beside me. And he ends up building a house like 200 square feet bigger, just so that he can stay his beggar. Oh, yeah. Here we go. Anyways, we're having some people over and fun's going on. And all of a sudden, it's like, you know, this is during the springtime. We were out in the summer or something. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting in the bedroom, wasted, and I hear the front door open.
Yeah.
And I'm going like, is it like, we don't have dogs. We don't have kids at the time. I said, did the front door just open? And I don't know. I don't hear it. So I get out, I kind of open the door and I'm looking down. And sure enough, the bathroom, the two piece in the, on the main, is like, there's a light on. I'm going like, and I'm going like, holy. And he goes, what? I go, what are you doing? He goes, taking a shit.
Oh, no.
I go, why are you taking a shit? He goes, because I had to take a shit. I said, your house has four bathrooms. Why are you not taking one there? He goes, well, I won't say any names. He goes, the wife's a little mad at me right now, and there's no toilet paper on the main floor, and I was afraid to go upstairs. So I walked over to your house, used the key, and let myself in.
Oh, no, God. Oh, my God. You can't write that. Sums up my
the professional color. Dumper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus. That sums them up. And like, I go like, okay. And I went back to bed. I said, who is it? I go, it's Bully. What's he doing? He's going to the washroom. He's like, why is he going to the washroom? The wife's mad at him right now. It's like, oh, okay. So we go back to bed. It's like 2 hours later. I walk over, knock on the door. Hey, how's things going over here? She's still mad at me. So I might have to come over again.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you can.
That's a bullet. I shouldn't say too much, but yeah, anyways, Bully's great guy, good team guy, and but he was classic on the road.
He was a character for sure.
Yeah, that certainly makes him one. That's well, that,
Jim, I remember the game. I don't know who. I just remember him in a game. He faked that he was injured. They brought out the stretcher.
Come on.
Took him in behind the stands, and he got up and was running around. And they had it on Hockey Night in Canada, following him. He didn't know.
Was that Marty McSorley speared
him? Yeah, he speared him, and he faked like he was dead, and then he got up. That was in the playoffs, I think, wasn't it?
I think he was trying to get the 5 minute major.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But he didn't realize the cameras are still on him. Right?
Exactly.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
He was a hell of a player too.
Yeah. He got 50. He might have got 50. Did he play in Pittsburgh or just?
Yeah. He got 50 at least once. And so I remember him one time. We had two goalies when I first broke in. We had Reggie Lemelin and Donnie Edwards. Remember those two guys? And so Donnie Edwards, and I mean, individually, they were both nice guys. But if they were in the same room together, they wouldn't talk to each other. Yeah. And so come, like, just terrible. People are listening going, like, what kind of people are hockey players? But, like, Thanksgiving would come or Christmas would come, and because we couldn't get home in time, they would invite people over to their houses because they were both married with families. But if you went to, like, Reggie Lemelin's house, you weren't allowed to mention Don Edwards. And if you went to Don Edwards' house, you weren't allowed to mention Reggie Lemelin. And I was at Reggie's the one time, and the one child, he had a couple, I think he had three children, but the one child said something about Donnie Edwards, and in French, he was like, Donnie Edwards, like, goody room, sort of thing.
That's
like,
funny. He'd have to go to his
room. And we're all looking at each other, like, don't mention Donnie Edwards in the house.
We had Wendell Clark on the show, and we talked about Donnie Edwards. We played with him at the end of his career, and they put in started Kenny Raggett in St. Louis in the playoffs, not Donnie Edwards. So he was so fucking pissed off. And we went down to St. Louis, and I think we won both games or won one, lost one. And we charter back. Everybody's going to their cars. We all parked in the same area in Toronto, and Lickbag. We nicknamed him Lickbag. Donnie decides he's going to burn out, like pull back up as fast as he can in this old Corvette that he had. It was a 70s something. and kind of and squeal the tires and take off and show everybody how pissed off he is. Well, somebody had stolen all of the lug nuts on his tires.
No.
And as he backed up, all four tires popped off.
Awesome.
And the thing's skidding across the pavement, sparks flying everywhere.
Oh my God.
And everybody, he's like, what am I? He got out. He was almost in tears, might have been in tears. My wife's going to kill me.
Oh my God.
Who did this? And we're like, nobody, I didn't. Everybody's like, I didn't. And he's like, what am I going to do? And everybody got in their car and said, call a tow truck. And left.
Did you?
So anyways, that's my Donnie Edwards story.
Yeah. And only hockey players, not a couple lug nuts. Fucking do them all. Do them all. Get every wheel. Yeah, get every wheel for doing this.
Well, the kids were stealing them because they're chrome. I think that's why they got stolen.
Oh, okay.
Anyways.
Did you like, because not everyone does, a lot of people, it's their boyhood dream to play for Toronto. But Russ has talked about it, saying, you don't understand, man, that a big part of it is not a bunch of fun. It's a great city. And Russ, you often speak about it, but under the microscope, it's not everyone's cup of tea. I recall a couple of guys. It might have been Brian McCabe. I forget if he played for Toronto or one of those guys got traded to Florida. And they were interviewing him going, this got to be the worst day of your life. And the guy said, I could not be happier, man. I couldn't stand the pressure of every single minute about Maple Leafs. And I'm down here where this is back in the day when Florida wasn't great. What was your experience playing in Toronto, Jamie?
Well, for me, I grew up in Newmarket, more or less. So my dad was, my mom had passed away a few years before. So my dad was living up there more or less by himself. And the fact that I didn't know where I was getting traded to, of course, but then when I get told I'm getting traded to Toronto, I'm going like, wow. So I can just slip into the old bedroom, right, in Newmarket and stay with my dad. And then we had a brand new baby. It was like a week old. Wow. And so he got a chance to be a granddad sort of thing. So that was really quite good. But the biggest issue with Toronto is, and I was lucky because as soon as we went in there, Wendell and all the boys and Dougie, they got kind of invigorated and we had a pretty good team. And we had about 4 years, maybe five at the most, where you'd say that we were one of the best teams in the league. And so the media, they had to be careful what they said, because if you curved Wendell too much, or you carved Dougie, you could curve me, but some of the guys, you had to be careful, because the fans really liked them, and they really liked the team, and we went to the semifinals a couple times, and I remember the one time it was over 2 hours to get out of the Maple Leaf Gardens. We just couldn't get out. The Yonge Street was packed, and all the different streets were packed. And you couldn't go anywhere, so you just sat in the Wives Lounge, which was the size of like a sea can, yeah. Right? And not like the new ones now. And literally, so consequently, we were treated pretty well. But once the team started to make that little bit of a turn, then because there's 100 reporters that are following the Leafs versus 10 in Calgary and 10 in Edmonton or whatever the heck it is. They're all trying to differentiate themselves, right? So they're getting more mean-spirited all the time. Oh, this guy's no damn good, and this is why. The guy might have had a great game and might be plus two, but we got to get rid of him, right, sort of thing. So if you couldn't handle that, I can see why you'd be a little bit anxious to get out of there. And there were guys that just the pressure on them to perform. I think it was tougher actually on forwards, because if you're expected to be a goal scorer, no, we need 30 out of you, and you're on pace for 18 or something. Like, well, okay, I'm doing my best. Yeah, well, do it better, right? And they would, day in, day out, they would report on how poorly you were playing. Even when you might have been having a couple of good games, they still would get on you. So lots of guys got traded out of Toronto that shouldn't have, but lots of guys got traded because they wanted to be traded out of there.
Yeah, yeah.
Great city, great place to play.
Yeah.
The reporters are tough. They're tough there, and probably tough.
Well, there's a few select ones that are idiots, right? Yeah. Like
Yeah.
It's, I don't even want to mention their names.
Well, yeah, not, they'll still come after you.
not only that. Yeah. They'll still come after, they're still bugging
well, I did punch one right in the face. Yeah. So
good for you.
I still feel good about that.
Yeah. You know? Gordy Wilson is the play-by-play guy, the color analyst in Ottawa with Dean Brown for the Senators. And I got to be careful. I don't want to throw Gordy under the bus. But he talks about not only is it tough on players, but when you go in there as a visiting team, the Toronto holds all their cards pretty close to their chest. And he said they're very difficult to work with to try and get interviews of guys and stuff like that. So it's difficult all around. Let's talk about the heyday, Jamie, the rivalry. You know, rivalries have come up all the time. There's always this debate about does the league need it? Do we have to get back to where it was? Whatever that means, you know. But one of the greatest of all time, I was part of it as a fan, was the Calgary Flames Edmonton Oilers rivalry in the Wayne Gretzky era and in your era back then. And I can certainly say as a fan, everyone marked the calendar. Everyone marked the calendar going, yeah. And back then, right? Did you play eight times? Smythe Division?
Eight times plus two preseason and then postseason. So you might play seven in the postseason. You're going like, holy Christ, we played each other like 17 times.
Right.
And right. You didn't hate each other at the beginning of the year. You hated each other by the end. I can tell you that.
What was it? Was it completely different, Jamie? That whole deal of that rivalry, you know, as opposed to, okay, we got Winnipeg. Or we got Edmonton. Walk us through that as a player, what the buildup was like, if there was, or are we wrong here that there's not a bigger rivalry as we thought?
Well, to give you an example, I got traded in, or not traded in, I got signed out of school, and I got signed in January. And so for the first 2 weeks in their infinite wisdom, they said, you got to get in shape. Right. Well, I was right out of college and I had like a 6% body fat, which I've been wow. lucky enough to move beyond.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Good.
I'm past that now.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I was in pretty good shape, but I said, yeah, but more importantly, get to know the guys, get to know how the systems work. So I hadn't been on TV or really the radio or anything. And I was up in a spot called Market Mall, which is a lot bigger now, but it was like one of the two big malls in the city. And the city at the time was about, you know, 425,000 people. Mm-hmm. And I'm just sitting there because I'm bored. I don't know anybody in the town. And so I'm just walking around killing time. And some lady comes up to me and goes, McCowan, you're McCowan. And I'm going like, yes, ma'am. Like, you know, you're playing Edmonton this, you know, tomorrow or whatever the heck it was. And I go, yes, you're correct. He goes, you better win. You better win. I don't give a shit about anything else. And I'm going like, okay. And I'm like, I can hardly wait to tell my parents on Sunday.
Yeah.
Because I always waited until Sunday because it was cheap to phone back then.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yes, exactly.
After 6 o'clock.
Yeah. And I'm going like, wow, like this, no one even knows who I am, but somehow they know who I am already. And all they cared about was playing against Edmonton. And I always say this, you know, Winnipeg, you know, they had a pretty solid team there. And Howard Chuck and that the boys – and Vancouver had a really good team too. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Edmonton was like A, you know, Calgary was like A minus, but then Vancouver and Winnipeg were like B pluses. Like they were right there. And on any given game, mm-hmm. they could beat either team. And LA unfortunately was a little bit a step below. There were some pretty solid games there. There were some pretty hard-hitting games and some good scoring games, and they were great games to play. But when we played against Edmonton, maybe because the teams and, more importantly, the cities hated each other more,
right.
Right. There was a step above.
Yeah.
And, like, I remember sitting there for my first game in the corral, and, you know, they've got some Vaseline. And I think, oh, we're going to be pranking somebody with some Vaseline, right? No. It's like it's Edmonton. So you're, you know, the five or six guys that are the fighters are putting some Vaseline on their foreheads and their nose and their cheeks and stuff. And then they bring out some Vaseline onto the bench, too, just in case you're sweating in it and it goes away. And I'm sitting there going like, okay, so they're preparing for the fight sort of thing. And,
like boxers. And, yeah.
Yeah. And sure enough, I think I told this story. My first fight ever in the NHL, is against Edmonton, and we're on the corral, and I'm Richie Dunn, who unfortunately has passed years ago, and he and I were partners, and we're arguing like who has to sit up high and who has to sit down low on those benches.
Oh, they're brutal.
Right.
We're so busy. We're so busy arguing. We don't realize the benches have already gone on. Like, and now we've got a full bench brawl and people are going, get out there. We're going, what happened here? So we jump on. And, anyways, I end up having this fight, and it's like my joke is always, I think it was Glenn Anderson I grabbed. And anyways, one thing leads to another, and I end up fighting Dave Semenko, but I didn't know who he was at the time. There's no internet, you know, like, oh, sure, he's big, but is he tough? Like, come on. Apparently he is big and he is tough. And it goes on and on. But at the end of the day, what happens is, he's pulled my helmet off and he's whacking me on the head. And about every five or six whacks, I kind of throw a punch up at him. I think I hit him. I don't know what I've done. And then all of a sudden he stops hitting me. And I'm thinking to myself, I've hurt him, right? Oh, this is it. I've hurt this big knob, right? And so then I'm afraid to look up, though, because I'm like, well, if I look up, is he standing there waiting to give me another pop? Finally, I do look up, and he's now fighting Paplinski at the same time as holding on to me. And Paplinski's got a hold of Gretzky, and he's got a hold of me. So I'm thinking, like, I'm at the same level as Gretzky. That's the way I think. Sure, yeah. And but the best part about the whole fight is I get kicked out of the game and stuff, and all the rest of the team, like, hey, he's only been with us for a while. He's a college guy. Like, no one came out of college. And Gracie's fighting the big guy. And, like, how stupid is this guy?
Yeah, right. But,
or how tough.
Suddenly I was part of the team. Like, okay, I was immediately part of the team. This guy's on us. We're buying you a beer. Let's go. But the best thing for me was, besides getting a couple free beers, was that on the box scores the next day, and you know, Russ, you know how it used to be. You didn't have Sportsnet or that. You rarely saw the highlights unless it was Toronto, Montreal, maybe Boston. And then you just read it and you go like, oh, Calgary versus Edmonton. And oh, here were the fights and here are the fights. And they see McCowan versus Semenko.
Yeah.
And everybody in the league could see that. McCowan versus Semenko, right?
Perfect.
Like, so around the league, people are going like, yeah, that 34 guy, he's the guy who fought Semenko. I got to be a little careful about him.
Perfect. You got a lot of room after that. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Honest to God, I had like four fights in my first year and a half. And one was DuPont out of Chicago. Wow. And I got really lucky because I didn't even know who it was. I speared Esposito. Why I was in front of the net, I don't know. But and Esposito gives me a good one reading.
Yeah.
And I turn around to like hack him again. And all of a sudden DuPont's there and he's already dropped his gloves. And he's a little bit bigger than me. And the funny story is I missed completely the first two and I hit him on the third and I go to throw a fourth. He's already fallen. So just show you how inexperienced a fighter I am. Otherwise I would have been trailing him down there. And the referee comes up, he goes, I think you got this. Okay. And go to the bench. But again, now it says my name and DuPont. So I did get some extra space. And, my joke is I milked that for the next 17 years.
Attaboy. Sure. Attaboy.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you? Jamie, when you retired as a hockey player, were you going to stay in hockey? I like to ask guys who did play a long time. Rusty did a little bit of coaching after. Walk us through there and where you are now, what you're doing with your life now.
Well, you know what? I retired from Detroit and I was still in the middle of maybe should I play another game or two? And I was 39 at the time. I did have some opportunity, but I just decided, you know, enough's enough. You know, I'm relatively healthy and you hear stories of guys, well, you see them now all the time. We have a guy, Joel Otto, probably very familiar to you. He's had both his hips worked on. He's had his knee worked on. You know, we've had all kinds of guys. And so far, I've been fortunate. You know, I fell doing some real estate, which I do now, and hurt my knee. So that's my knee injuries from real estate, not from hockey.
Trying to get them to close?
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on. Yeah. I know Semenko. Yeah.
Get off and, your knees.
Sign the deal.
Jamie, get off your knees. Quit begging. We'll
yeah. Hey, anything to close the deal.
Sure.
Anything.
Do whatever it takes.
And the funny part is that, what was that show? Modern Family. The guy on Modern Family was the realtor.
Yeah.
Like, oh, every time we'd be watching something, he'd be doing something. I'd go like, I could do that. Yeah. Or I might use that one.
Not a bad idea.
But I know I retired and got involved doing some stuff and was doing some charity work and made some phone calls. And one of the guys that was running a directional drilling company, which means something out west here, but if you don't know, it's how you drill oil and stuff. And he says, oh, we're looking for a salesman. I said, I know nothing about the oil patch. He goes, you can talk, you're perfect, right? So get her going. And I did that for a while. And then I was, I don't know how I got into it, but I was building drilling rigs, like big drilling rigs for oil.
I didn't know that.
This is a crazy story. I met a guy who was an engineer in town, and he was pitching a story to some guys in New York. And the guy said to me, what do you do? And I said, I don't do really anything. I just do this, that, and the other. And he goes, you got any ideas? I said, well, I wouldn't mind building some drilling rigs. He goes, well, come back tomorrow with an idea, and we'll pitch it in New York. And so I go home, and I'm cutting and pasting and stuff. And you're talking about a guy who's not a computer wizard. And I put together like 10 pages of how, you know, drilling rigs need to be built and how it's going to make so much sense because I'm an ex-hockey player. Honest to God, I get a phone call literally like 2 days later, and they go, hey, can you come down to New York on Friday? And I go,
come on.
Yeah, wow. Sure. Why? Why am I going to New York? He goes, we got two groups that are interested in your story. They want you to come in and pitch your story. And if they like it, they'll cut you a check. I go, huh, sure. Well, I haven't been in New York in a while. So I go down there, I tell the story by myself, no support staff, nothing. And I get like 3 days later, I go, hey, the bank, I was with the Royal Bank, a guy, the manager there goes, hey, Jamie, you have to come down here. I go, why? There is something wrong with your account. I go, uh-oh. And no, it's a good story though. He goes, well, I'm just telling you. Someone just put in $16 million into your personal bank account.
Wait a minute. Oh my God. 1/6?
1/6, $16 million.
Come on.
And he goes, you don't understand. Like, there's no restrictions on this money. This is your money. You can literally cut a check today and give it back to yourself, and you could be gone anywhere in the world with this money. And I said, well, let's wait until Friday. And he goes, why? He goes, because there's another $16 million coming in. So all of a sudden, from that one, like, three-hour conversation, they sent me $32 million cash.
Wow.
With nothing written down. Like, wow. Nothing. It was just unbelievable story. And I tell that story, they're going, like, you're lying. I'm going, I'm not lying. It's, like, $32 million. And he said, okay, build some drilling rigs and make us some money. And so I go, like, I guess I should start figuring out how to build a drilling rig, right? And talk to some guys from some engineering firms and stuff. And, you know, 2 years later, we end up selling it to another company, Flint Resources. And to this day, people go like, how the hell did you talk them into that? And I said, I just really don't know. I don't know how that.
That's amazing. That's
the most incredible story I've ever heard.
Was it successful when you sold it?
Yeah, that was right in the middle of the heat of it. Right. So it took like, where it should have taken 3 months to build a rig, it was taking like 8 months or 9 months. So we were up to, we had four rigs running and we had two that were partially built. And then the guys behind it, like one was like Dell Computers, like Dell has a one. Yeah.
It's a big name. Yeah.
Named. And so they ended up selling it to another company for more money,
right,
obviously. Because they were already built, and we already had the contracts.
Perfect.
And, you know, but classic case of inexperience. I had some options, and I had some other things that were going to happen, but I had to be complete owner and president and running it for 24 months. I was only running it for 23 months when they sold it.
Right? Oh.
So, so
that's like money. A prenup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. But I ended up, we had all these trucks and stuff for moving the rigs, and they kind of went like, this is crazy stuff. They go like, well, we don't want the trucks. So here, we'll just say you paid a dollar for the trucks.
Wow.
So suddenly I had $1 million worth of trucks.
Wow.
Right? And it's like, okay, this is still crazy, but like, okay, I'll take the trucks and we'll do some rip moves and stuff. And so that's kind of what I did. And then I decided to get back into real estate. Because I had owned a Remax franchise in the 80s and 90s.
Uh-huh.
And right now I'm an owner of a half owner of a Ford Lincoln dealership in Ontario, just about 20 miles from my hometown in Orangeville.
Sure.
And that's worked out very well. So, you know, I always laugh that I didn't get overpaid for sure. I wasn't like your brother getting paid big money. But I was fortunate that I made some good business decisions. And the reality is I made more money outside of hockey than I did inside of hockey.
Good for you.
And for a guy like Lanny McDonald or Larry Robinson, you could definitely see that happening because some of these guys they're making $200,000 for working for the team. And when they're playing, they're making $60,000, right?
Yeah. Right. I want to back up a sec. So when you were telling that story, that might be the most incredible story I've ever heard. $32 million. From a guy who doesn't know the drilling business. So that's when you were telling it, I'm going to go, don't tell me there was like $100,000 they threw in your bank account there. That's what I was thinking, Rusty. I don't know. That number came to my head going, don't tell me.
I thought it was going
to
be $3 million.
I didn't think millions at all. I just thought, don't tell me you woke up.
Well, New
how
York.
How did you possibly have an idea of what a drilling rig should look like or an improvement on it? Where did you get that experience?
Well, you know, when I was selling directional drilling, and back then, I mean, people that don't understand it, there were 7 companies that did it in Calgary and Alberta and Western Canada, and that was it. And then within a couple of years, suddenly it was like 14 companies, and then there was 20 companies, then it got crazy high. But what I did was I went around, and when the drilling rigs were running, And as a salesperson, you would make money by having, you know, CNRL or whatever. It would have 2 rigs running in Northeast BC and blah, blah, blah. So I'd have all these rigs running, and I would drive around all the rigs and talk to the people and talk to our drillers and talk to stuff. And I went down to Oklahoma to see how they did it down there with some guys from CNRL. And like, talk about a difference in security and safety. Like, down there, they're wearing flip-flops and T-shirts, you know.
Spinning chain.
You know, it's just unbelievable. So I mean, I'm not an engineer. I'm not trained in that. I did know some guys that knew stuff about it. And so when I went in, you know, they basically said, why would we give you money? And I'd say, well, I'm Jamie McCowan.
Beautiful.
I'm well known in Calgary. That's where that's the epicenter of oil in North America at the time. Now it's gone down to Houston.
Right.
But Calgary was the epicenter. And so I said within a 5-minute walk, there's 200 oil companies.
Right. Right.
And they're going like, yeah. And I said, and they know me. And I said, I can get in and talk to these guys. And more importantly, I know guys that are really good BSers and play a lot of hockey with them and play baseball and go drinking and do all that stuff. And that's how it works.
Wow.
So you have a good engineer that's your buddy. He's feeding you like, oh, here's $4 million worth of work this year. Here's $8 million worth of work this year, which is how it worked. Now it's a little bit different. Now it's a little bit more, I shouldn't say above board, but you really have to have your I's dotted and your T's crossed now to get the work. So when I say I went in there, but I didn't have an entourage, I didn't have any experience per se. I just said, I have guys and I can find guys within a month I can be building rigs.
Unbelievable.
I got buddies in Calgary that are in the business, and they both told me, they said, it doesn't, in Calgary, in the oil business, it doesn't matter your last name or where you went to school. It's whether you're not honest handshake guy and hard worker. And you can do anything in Calgary. And that's why I think, to Jamie's point, so many guys have been successful there because.
Well, you were too, Russ, right?
I'm just talking about Calgary and the oil patch.
Well, I mean, one of the other reasons I settled there is I remember Doc Seaman, I said, what took us out to his barn and his farm, and, you know, beautiful spot, of course. And, you know, here I am making $100,000 a year and I'm walking around like I'm the king of all people.
Sure.
And I'm playing horseshoes, and this is an incredible story. I think I'm with Steve Bozak. But anyways, we're playing horseshoes, the two of us, and we're playing against who all comers sort of thing, and they have this tournament together. And so at the end, Doc comes up to me and goes, hey, how are you guys doing? You need a beer? Like, here's the owner bringing us beer, right? And it's like, oh, yeah, sure, we'll have a beer. He goes, so what do you think about that team down there? And I go, we're going to kick their asses. Like, it's going to be unbelievable. We're going to destroy them. And he goes, I don't think you're going to beat them. And I go, well, why would you think we're not going to beat them? Do you not know who we are, sort of thing? And he goes, well, you see the one guy there? That's the mayor of Calgary. And, you know, and the guy standing beside him, that's the premier. And the guy, other guy that's playing, he just invested with our company. So
you're going to lose.
They're all really good.
Company golf here. Yeah.
And so then I realized, okay, the guy that you know, is wearing his cowboy boots and everything else. And I'm thinking like, okay, I don't know who this guy is, but I completely dominate him in the money department. Right. Find out he's worth like $200 million. Right. And there's another guy. And so I asked Doc, I said, Doc, you know, I got to apologize. I don't know enough people. Tell me who all these people are. He started pointing out who all these people were. And the average guy there was worth like $20 million, $25 million. And I was making $100,000 thinking I'm the king.
Yeah.
And then I realized how down to earth everybody was. Like, here I am. They didn't look down at me. They didn't talk down to me. I'm, you know, even though I'm just a hockey player kind of guy, they were just all so nice. And they all said, well, we're glad you're here. And we hope you settle in Alberta, sort of thing. And I went like,
cool.
This is totally different than Ontario. Like, totally. Ontario's nice. Yep. But out there, it was kind of like, yeah, to your point, Russ, if you lose your job today, like, you don't mope around for 6 months or a year. You like, okay, well, I'm going to find another job and I'm going to find it by the end of the week.
Yeah.
And I'll be up and working again. That was kind of the mentality. And that was something that really struck me. And maybe that's one of the other reasons why I wanted to settle in Calgary.
Yeah, I never, that's one of the most best post-career stories I've heard. Jamie, listen, it sounds like that you're a Flame through and through, you know, amongst the other teams you played for, Detroit, Toronto. What's happening with the excitement, the really wordy Daryl Sutter? I was telling you at the dinner how hilarious that guy is. Russ. He's so killing good. Me every time I see him. No.
Yeah, you know, and it's hard to say whether he's always been as tight-lipped, if you want to call it, but it's definitely his style now.
Yeah.
And you know, they win 9-1, they lose 9-1. Like, there's like 12 words, right? You know?
It's hilarious.
They should have played better.
They're know? One of, like, I was doing a podcast with Stevie. I do a daily one in Ottawa, SWP. And today we're taught, Stevie pointed out, like, the top 10 teams in the league right now, all of them have had, I don't know, maybe two losses in their last 10. Colorado's like 9-1. I think Florida's 10-0. Calgary's ripping through there. Is this the year, Jamie? It's been a long time, man, for a good run in the playoffs. What's the word on the street?
I think, well, I talked to Brad Trillin a couple of days ago, but I think it's always going to be the same thing. If that number one line that they've got there, you know, when you got Tkachuk and Lindholm and Johnny, when they get hot, they're pretty incredible, right? They're as good as any team any line in the league for sure. And the defense on Calgary is pretty deep, pretty strong. But I think it's like anything. If we have really good goaltending, I think we've got a chance. Colorado, they're a juggernaut, mm-hmm. but. You know, and Vegas is obviously a good team, but, you know, they might be screwed sort of thing. I think Calgary has the best chance that they've had since back into the, you know, the late 80s. I mean, I know in 2004 they went to the finals, but that was kind of this mediocre team that, you know, made it into the playoffs in eighth place and just caught fire. So they're not being counted on as that team. This is a good team. It's a really good team. You know, I always talk about a guy like Milan Lucic, mm-hmm. You know, making big money still. I know some people complain about it, but he brings a dimension that's tough to find in the league now. And, you know, he's skating harder and faster now than he was, four or five years ago. Every shift he's just given her. So when you see it, if you're not really paying attention, you go like, holy, that line is just going crazy out there. Who is it? It's his line, right? And so they've got a good team. But, you know, like you can't turn on the radio or TV without hearing about Toronto, right? And like, how good is Toronto? I guess we'll wait and see.
Yeah.
But I think, to be honest with you, out of the West, Edmonton is peaking at the right time. Calgary's strong. And Colorado, you'd have to guess, if you had to put money on it, one of those three teams is coming out of the West.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And out of the East, you tell me, is it Florida or Tampa, or is it Toronto, or is it Carolina? Well, I mean, I don't know.
In the West, the sleeping giant is the Canucks.
Well, they've got to get in, though. They're 5-6.
If they get in, watch out.
Stop it. Yeah, stop it.
Seriously, like,
they've been one of the best teams in the last 40 games. Speaking of the last 10, right? And you just, once you get in, Jamie, I mean, everybody who gets in is freaking good. There's obviously some stronger teams. So the teams you mentioned are all, you know, one of them. I agree with you. Those, one of those three teams should come out of the West for sure. But, you know, I'm pulling for the Canucks because they're just like, Bruce, there it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, at the beginning of the year, I think everybody thought that Vancouver is going to be maybe vying for top place in the West.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's the good guy? Pedersen?
Pedersen, yeah.
He never really got going there for until halfway through. And your best player has to be playing well.
Yeah.
And he wasn't playing as well as he should have, obviously. But getting back to Calgary, you know, like, regardless of what happens this year, you know, Calgary's finally going to go through what happened in Chicago a number of years ago. Is like, how do you keep all your good players? Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, like what do you give Johnny now if Johnny ends up with 110 points?
Yeah.
You know, Tkachuk, who, you know, I know he plays a completely different style. Good chance he's over 100 points. Right. And they both need a contract. You know, it's like, so.
You're going to lose either one of those two or somebody else that's really good.
Agreeing with, because it's myself, I brought it up this morning. It may be the best shot in a long time that we're going to get a Canadian team going to the Stanley Cup final, right? You mentioned Edmonton, Calgary, Toronto. Montreal's out of it and Ottawa's out of it, but Vancouver's not. So, anyway, Jamie, this was great. I am going to hang up the phone and I am on my way to New York with an idea that I have for a drilling rig. I'm getting on a fucking plane tonight. Rusty, you're coming with me. No entourage, no nothing. We just need the name of that company, Jamie. Okay, we'll give you a piece of the
action. Give us the address.
Yeah. Jamie, this was great, man. Really,
thanks a lot.
Yeah, appreciate your coming on and the stories were fantastic. And we'd love to have you on again, man. And obviously, you don't need to be running around the country doing charity events, but it's super cool that you do, you know, to give back. I love that story, and I love what you're doing, and you keep doing it, and I'll run into you down the road somewhere. Thanks a million, Jamie.
Thanks, Jamie.
I appreciate the invite.
Okay. Take care, guys. Talk to you later, brother. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to The Suspendables. If you're enjoying the show, we invite you to subscribe so you never miss a single episode, leave a positive review, and share the show with your followers. And check out our brand new website, thesuspendables.com.